Chapter 5. Malo Enriquez was the first to say something as Jesse Stone walked into the bar.
"Hey, look, boys, it's the commish, man,"
he shouted in an over-the-top Chicano accent. Malo was a left-handed reliever for the Dukes at the very end of his career, just hanging on for a paycheck and one last shot at the majors when Jesse was promoted from AA to AAA. Malo had been the oldest member of the team. The guys had called him Viejo, old man, out of respect. After all, Malo had been in the bigs, on and off, for more than a decade. He had been to baseball's promised land, a land of significant meal money, plane travel, smooth infields, and three-tiered stadiums. He was more than 10 years older than most of his former teammates. The age difference hadn't been as noticeable back then. It was now. His once purple-black hair was gray and thinning. His waistline was moving in the opposite direction. He was thick around the middle. But Malo looked happy in a way Jesse could never quite imagine himself looking. "Chief of police, Viejo," Jesse Stone said, clasping Malo's meaty right hand in his. Jesse felt an odd rush of respect and jealousy for Malo. Was it because Malo had made it to the top of the mountain, or because the old reliever was happy? Both seemed like perfectly adequate reasons. Only 16 of the men who had played with Jesse were in attendance. A few had simply turned down the offer of an all-expenses-paid trip to New York City. Some men just didn't like looking behind them. Jesse thought there was something to be said for that. A couple had fallen through the cracks, beyond even Vic Prado's considerable reach. Two were dead. Paulie Hamaker in a car crash, Johnny Wheeler by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Jesse knew about Paul and John, but he hadn't paid attention to the email updates concerning the reunion Vic had sent along every week leading up to the event. Jesse knew each of the men in attendance by face and by name, in spite of the fact that he hadn't seen or spoken with any of them since the day he packed his duffel bag and left Albuquerque. And as he went teammate to teammate shaking hands, Jesse read their life stories on their faces. Not much got past Jesse Stone. Not then, not now. Julio Blanco, the catcher, was still a cold, pock-faced bastard with a handshake like a vice. Robbie Towns, the first baseman, had the beatific smile of a man who had found God. Good thing, too, because he had never found a way to hit a curveball. Cal Manley, the right fielder, had the restless look of a man in two places at once. "Cal," Jesse said, shaking the outfielder's hand. Cal's unfocused eyes looked past Jesse. "Stoney?" Neither man was much of a talker, but just the distracted way Cal spoke Jesse's name told Stone that Cal was in a bad place. One look at Jimmy Niedermeyer, the Duke's old third baseman, told Jesse that Jimmy had probably been up to no good. He had a prison physique, all upper body, no legs. He also had the bloated look of a juicer, acne, thinning hair, the feral eyes of a man spoiling for a fight. The other guys, the guys who had had at least a cup of coffee in the majors, all seemed to be in better places. Not that they had made fortunes in real estate, restaurants, and venture capital like Vic, or even that they had achieved the level of status equal to Jesse's. In fact, Jesse was doing better than most of them. By some measures, he had gotten further in life than anyone except Vic Prado. That's not how Jesse saw it. What Jesse saw was a runner barreling into him at second base. Moses had nothing on Jesse Stone. Neither had made it to the promised land. Vic Prado, the man behind this whole affair, seemed to be purposely hanging back. It was like opening day festivities when the team is introduced to the crowd, called out one by one, then waits along the first or third baseline. Each player pops out of the dugout and shakes the hand of all the guys introduced before him. And there was Vic, waiting at the end of the line for Jesse. He looked like $1 million, tens of millions. Everything from the manicured hands and the straight white teeth to the perfectly tailored tuxedo and the Patek Philippe on his wrist spoke of pampered wealth. It didn't hurt that Vic was still a handsome son of a bitch. "What'll you have, old buddy?" asked Prado, squeezing Jesse's hand. "Black Label and soda, tall glass." Good taste in scotch for a shortstop, but don't be shy, Jesse. Have a Macallan or a Blue Label. It's on me. Think of it as helping me with my taxes.
Cop, Jesse said, correcting his former double play partner and taking back his hand. Black Label suits me.
Black Label and soda, tall glass, for my friend here, Prado shouted to the barman.
The word friend stuck in Jesse's craw. They weren't friends. They had been roommates once for a few months, and a very good combination on the field. Friends? Not that he was aware of. Over Vic's right shoulder, Jesse spotted Kayla talking to another woman. The woman was spectacular looking, if in a blonde kind of way. He turned his attention back to Prado.
Skip's not here, Jesse said.
Vic stared directly at Jesse.
No skipper, no coaches or organization people either. Just us.
Us? Jesse got a weird vibe. Vic was talking about the players from the team, but it felt like he was being even more selective than that. He sensed that Vic was talking about just the two of them. Jesse knew that couldn't be the case. No one would go to such elaborate lengths just to celebrate with a guy he had shared a room with half a lifetime ago. Not even a man as flush as Vic Prado. Prado stepped away from Jesse, raising his glass.
To the Dukes, he called out in his rich baritone. Then looking back at Jesse, to us.
They drank. Vic clinked Jesse's glass.
Okay, guys, the limos are out front. We'll be heading down to the steakhouse now.
Vic walked out first. Jesse stayed back to finish his drink. He had the feeling the limos weren't going anywhere without him. He didn't know why he should think that, but he did. And if he was wrong, so what? He'd walk.
Hello, Jess. It was Kayla, the blonde, at her side. This is my friend Dee Harrington.
Dee was quite a friend, and on closer inspection, spectacular, didn't quite do her justice. She was otherworldly, more striking even than Jen, Jesse's ex-wife. She was a few years Kayla's junior and had the fire in her eyes that Kayla no longer seemed to possess. Dee looped her arm through Jesse's.
Do you mind, she said. I feel like a spare wheel. I'm here to keep Kayla company, but I've got no one to keep me company.
Sure, Jesse put his empty glass on the bar. When he turned back to Dee, he noticed Kayla's eyes. The fire was back. Jesse held out his other arm for her. She took it and put her lips very near to his ear.
We need to talk, Jess, but not here and not now.
Jesse nodded, and the three of them made their way out of the bar.